Austin Center at UCLA, the Bank of America, and the Governor's Office for inviting me here. I'm Steve Clemens. I'm Washington editor-at-large of The Atlantic, known to many of you as The Atlantic Monthly. But now we've got The Atlantic Wire, we've got Atlantic Live, we've got Atlantic.com, and we still publish a magazine. But it's a great pleasure to be here, and we're doing so many things. You know, I was invited to come here just in case, you know, Jerry Brown, you know, was his normal monotone, you know, soft-selling self. Governor, it's great to be with you. Great honor to be with you. We also have with us David Crane, CEO, right here in the middle of NRG Energy. I asked each one of them for a little bit of fun stuff that was off of their bio, and David started his career out as a pizza guy in Hong Kong and done very well. He is part of the Texas cabal that Governor Brown was just talking about, but here to join us. His firm last year jumped 100 points in the Fortune 500, which is no mean feat, but he just whispered to me on the way out that next year, you know, you never know what might happen. A firm could just as easily fall 100 points, but we hope you keep going in that direction. To David's left, we have Lyndon Rive, CEO of SolarCity, an amazingly fast-growing and important company that really does take a piece of this question, which is so important. I recently hosted the CEO of Solaria and some other solar executives in Washington, sort of took them around to sort of show what was happening in the revolution of cost in the solar panel production capacity. But there's another side of it, which is financing, which is actually installing. And Lyndon, who's a very old 34 years old, already started three companies. It's just a dynamo. I know absolutely nothing fun about Rick Needham here in the middle, but he is Director of Green Business Operations and Strategy at Google. Google must be fun, but what I would tell you, I went out last night and looked at the Google Green blog called googlegreenblog.blogspot.com, and if you look through and just get a small slice, of what Google is doing to invest and help animate as a large company with lots of different interests, with lots of people with, you know, computers and whatnot that are using them. Energy is very much part of Google's portfolio of concerns in almost, it's about $780 million, but about $1 billion of investment they're approaching in terms of getting in this area. So I just want to open this panel discussion. We're going to have a conversation up here, no canned talks. But I want to ask Governor Brown, when you started in the 1970s thinking about fossilized vegetation and our dependence on that, just give us a quick contrast between that time and today. What you were thinking about this, you were just absolutely the pioneer in the country in laying out and thinking about what your concerns on the energy was, and way before this became the flavor of month for and also a necessity for the country, you are a pioneer in this. And now you're in the implementation stage. You're back in the governor's office. I tell you one last thing before I turn it over to my panelists. It is an embarrassment, you know, coming from Washington. I wish we were all of us sitting in the caucus room of the Russell Senate office building showing what partnerships are in this room and that you can actually do something as we're sitting there paralyzed over the debt ceiling talks in Washington. That once these get solved, I think they will get solved, but even if, you know, one way or the other, we're still going to have all the same problems that America has on the other side of this theater that we've had. So it is a great pleasure to see all of you working so constructively on this. But to Governor Brown, how did things look when you started things and looking at oil dependency and moving into renewables 30 years ago, and now we're back and we're actually doing it?
Back in the early 70s, the projection was about a 7% annual increase in energy consumption. And a fellow named Amory Levins wrote an article in Foreign Affairs where he flattened that curve dramatically and said, it's not needed. And that was heresy at the time. The renewables at that point mostly were solar hot water, and then the emergence of wind power. And, of course, wind power sounded very the specter of Don Quixote was conjured. But I pushed ahead with wind, although wind and wood chips became kind of a slogan there, which wasn't favorable. So it seemed far more marginal. When I was down in Blythe at the dedication of this 1,000-megawatt solar power plant, set of solar power plants, it'll be a number of parabolic mirrors. It's a $5 billion investment in the sand. And the fellow who is heading up the company ran an automobile factories in Europe and said that just this process of this is all off-the-shelf technology, and he has to build a whole assembly line literally in the sand in Blythe, California, which is pretty far from civilization. And so that's practical, that's real, it's happening. 35 years ago, all this stuff seemed far more marginal. In terms of wind, however, California in the mid-80s had 94% of the electricity generated by wind. It was only about 1,800 megawatts, but it was 94% of the world's wind. This just wasn't done. Photovoltaics were a lot more expensive. Wasn't conceivable that what we're talking about today would even be possible. And then, of course, the great opportunity was energy efficiency. And I can remember the Energy Commission set that up, and the developers fought it like crazy, that this will be another burdensome regulation. That's the way it was perceived, but we pushed it through. Same thing with appliance standards to make refrigerators and other appliances more efficient. We got that lined up, and then the national administration under President Reagan, they preempted California on appliance standards, and they adopted a no-standard standard so that we set us back. And the price of oil came down, and so everybody was set back. So I think what we have now is we have a maturing, it's by no means mature, but compared to what it was before, we're in a very real sector here that is going to be, I mean, it's like in the beginnings of computer. I remember when the Apple II was a very bold little instrument. And it was Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, supposedly in their backyard in 1973. It's hard to remember that there was no personal computer in the 70s. So it can move very, very quickly. The microchip was invented, I think, in the 60s. David Noyce, Robert Noyce, I think, came right out of Palo Alto. Packard and Hewitt. So we're in that early stage. Energy is a huge part of a modern economy. And the sun is abundant power. All we have to do is capture it. There's technical problems, there's financial problems, there's regulatory problems, there's coordination problems. And I can tell you that the various agencies, the California system operator, ISO, the PUC, and the Energy Commission are going to be working together. And my office is actively involved when local communities try to block the installation of photovoltaic, like some folks did in San Luis Obispo. We act to overcome the opposition. In Oakland, I learned that some kind of opposition you have to crush. You can talk a little bit, but at the end of the day, you have to move forward. And California needs to move forward with our renewable energy. And I'm going to do everything I can to bring together and to keep working with all these different agencies, and government has a hard time. There's nothing more powerful than turf, and each department has its own turf, and you need a superior authority to blend all that turf divisions together. And that's, I can assure you, you're going to get a very active involvement from the executive branch in the state of California. We're going to get it done, because I really see this. It really is the next oil industry or the next computer industry. It's not going to happen overnight, but we're on our way, and what we do in the next couple of days will be a very important step forward.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you. Lyndon, let me just jump to you for a moment. One of the interesting things the policy staff in Governor Brown's office shared with me, that even as we start out today, I guess the amount of kilowatt hours that the normal non-Californian American uses is about 14,000. California is at about 8,000. So there's already been on top of this, you've set very aggressive goals on reestablishing and asserting California's energy leadership. But you're out there with your firm on the installation side. You're creating jobs. You're growing quickly. But there is this interesting question of when you look and picking up either local distribution and distributed generation of power in the local arenas, this is what you do. What do you run into? What are your biggest obstacles as you deal with trying to meet, help communities meet what the governor has laid out as goals?
So a little perspective. So SolarCity covers all of the state. One thing that's nice about it is local jobs. So you have to get on the roof. The installation time frame for an average house is 2 to 3 days. That's how long it takes to install the system. To get the process from start to end takes 2 months.
On any person's house?
On average, on most of the people's houses.
Are there some places in California where it's faster than others?
There are. So San Jose, you can get over-the-counter permits. L.A. is not so great. So depending on the areas.
So who needs to be crushed in L.A.?
Speaking of the mic. Yes. I don't know how to answer that question.
The governor's office is open.
But the adoption is occurring. It's occurring fast. The biggest barriers, however, has always been the upfront cost. Now there are business models that eliminate the upfront cost. In fact, solar installations are free, and all you do is you pay for the power that the system generates at a lower cost than you're currently paying for power. So it's absolutely a win-win. But as incentives reduce, we have to take cost out of the equation, and the cost, one of the big costs, is permitting.
And permitting. Let me go to you, David. David, you're out of Texas. You sort of look at this broad distributed generation question. We were talking before, and you have a sort of a holistic view of what could be achieved here with energy that I think is somewhat revolutionary. Could you just walk us through a little bit the investments you're making, major investments in California across a number of major projects, but you're also looking at this DG question very seriously.
Well, I think, first of all, I'd say, we applaud the governor and his 12,000 megawatt goal. And in fact, we think distributed generation is the cutting edge of that holistic view that you're talking about. I think the way that we would look at it, we're doing a lot of utility size solar as well, maybe not the 1,000 megawatt project, but multi-hundred megawatt projects out in the California desert, and that's very positive. But I think the thing we have to recognize with a 12,000 megawatt distributed generation goal is that that's got to be consumer driven. You have to get someone to buy those 12,000 megawatts. And one of the things that we're very focused on is someone said to me yesterday, you can't exercise leadership if people aren't paying attention. And for the average American, they spend 2.4% of their disposable income on electricity. They spend twice that on fueling their car. And most Americans are much more used to thinking about energy in the context of the car. So one of the things I think that would be very helpful, since California is the leader in electric vehicles as well as distributed generation, is ways that you could incent businesses to tie those two together, because there's not much has been done in that area. And in that regard, I think that another trend that California can play to is, and this is very uncharacteristic, but I think in a lot of ways, big business is ahead of the average American when it comes to wanting to be sustainable. 93% of major multinational corporations say that they want sustainability to be a fundamental part of the image that they present to the American consumer. So I think that anything that can enable businesses, and Rick can speak about this because, there's probably no one that's more leading in this area in sort of general business than Google, is how can you get businesses to pay attention and synthesize things like distributed generation, and particularly rooftop distributed generation, because, then you don't have some of the noise of, using land, which is always a scarce value. No one seems to argue with the fact that, warehouse rooftops and rooftops generally are a non-controversial place to put distributed solar. But how do you get businesses to lead and then synthesize distributed generation, distributed solar with electric vehicles, with smart meters to create the holistic solution you're talking about? Because ultimately, what we're talking about here, what we're trying to point our company at, is the I have to learn how to say it first, but the democratization of energy use. I mean, the energy industry has to get in this century where communications and IT got to 30 or 40 years ago. It's about individuals having choice and controlling their own energy destiny, and that's putting all these things together, and distributed solar, I think, is the start of that.
Now, let me push back just on one thing or ask you. If we were in Washington and I had the staff directors of the Republican and Democratic Senate and Energy Committees, I met them a couple of weeks ago, they do think that the solar energy area has the most, we'll put in quotes, promise. But they don't look at it in the way that I feel the energy of this room is, that this is an immediate, right now, viable option across communities, that you've got real goals set, that you're looking at communities, permitting processes, levels of major investment. But at least Washington thinks that there's a scalability problem. And your company plays across a number of energy platforms. Do you, is that an unfounded view from D.C., or
well,
this room needs to knock back, or is there some serious credibility in that?
Well, there's no credibility in Washington. I wouldn't count on Washington. At this point, I wouldn't count on Washington for anything.
Right.
I think that's got to be a key part of the strategic calculus.
But on the scalability issue, is that a...
Well, I mean, California is a big place, and that's the scale that the governor's talking about. That scale, I mean, that's huge. That'll create the whole industry for the whole country just right here in California.
Right.
California can lead that way. Texas can lead that way. Just a few states can lead that way. But I just tell you one, I mean, most of the country is very interested in solar. I actually live in New Jersey, and even the northeast states where there's less sun are into. But I have to tell you, the other day I was at this little event, and the governor of Texas was standing there, and someone said, "I want you to meet the governor of Virginia." And he was standing next to the governor of Texas, and he started to talk. The East Coast are very excited about offshore wind as well. You know, you don't hear that out here because you don't have the right continental shelf. But this governor of Virginia starts talking about all the things he wants to do to incent offshore wind. And he's standing, like, literally, the governor of Texas, who's obviously an extremely conservative human being, is sitting right next to him. And I actually whispered to him, "Governor, are you a Republican?" And he said, "Yes, I'm a Republican. Obviously, that's why I'm standing here next to the governor of Texas." But my point is that governors, it's just the nature of the role of being a governor, I guess, is that governors actually are trying to get things done. They're trying to create jobs. They're trying to build their economies. And it doesn't really matter whether they're Democrats or Republicans. They're all trying to be practical. And that's completely opposite from what we see in Washington. So, you know, as we go around the country, we're much more focused on what's being done at the state level because we don't have any faith that anything's going to be done at the federal level.
Thank you. Rick, Google is not an energy company. It's an energy user. But Eric Schmidt, I've heard him talk about this a dozen times, looks at the energy question in the state and the nation around the world as a vital issue for the firm. Can you walk us through a little bit about why Google is putting such big stakes in your portfolio in this area?
Sure. And first, I'd like to also congratulate the governor on being a leader in signing the most aggressive renewable portfolio standard in the country and showing great leadership in the state. And this will come back because the short answer to your question is that we think that renewable energy and sustainability are great business opportunities, that it's an industry of the future that if we fail to invest, we'll lose that opportunity. But we get asked the question often, what is Google doing in the renewable energy space? And the answer is pretty simple. Like other companies, energy drives our business. And as a company that has sustainability as a core value, we want to make sure we use that energy as efficiently and have that energy source be as clean as possible. And so we've done several things to make that happen. First off is, as Emery Levins would point out, the first thing you do is just reduce the energy that you're using. And we've spent a lot of time and effort doing that, having data centers that basically use half the energy that a standard data center uses in the industry today. But beyond that, sourcing renewable energy has been one of the things we've been focused on as well. And when we looked around, when we made a commitment to be carbon neutral back in 2007, there weren't a lot of great options for renewable energy. So we decided, well, what can we do as a company to help support that? And we've done things like made investments in early stage companies. We've actually have our own R&D going on. We've made investments now in large-scale renewable energy projects. We've put facilities, on-site renewables, onto our own campus, whether it be solar, and we have some fuel cells. So we've done a lot of things. Right now, we've actually reached a point where we've committed over $780 million to renewables. That's just in projects alone. And over half of that will be actually for projects in the state of California. California is leading and allows investors like us to come in and say that these projects make great business sense for us. They also help to move California to a cleaner economy. And really, they are, again, great business opportunities for California to maintain their leadership. Those projects will also deliver about 1,500 megawatts of clean power into California. So we're very excited about that. What we would say, though, is, you know, we're one company. We're trying to do what we can to help usher in a clean energy future, which we think, again, is important and a good business opportunity. But we recognize that we're one company. So we would encourage other private industry, other companies, to do what they can to help support renewable energy within their own business models. I mean, we've found project investments that make sense for us on a returns basis, on looking at the risks, and helping to push forward an industry and technologies that we think make sense. So we would encourage other companies to do the same. Take a look. There are opportunities to invest here. And as I think people pointed out already this morning, Commissioner Farron pointed out financing is one of the key constraints. Linden would say financing was the primary constraint in their business model. We're helping to do what we can to help relieve that constraint. Which still needs relief.
I'm sure Bank of America is too, right?
Bank of America. We're actually co-investors with Bank of America and other projects as well, so they're doing their part as well. But financing is a constraint. We're doing what we can and would encourage other investors who maybe aren't in this space, like people would say, we're not, and look and find there are opportunities there to make good returns and help diversify your cash holdings while promoting an industry that makes sense to us.
One of the areas, Lyndon, just back to you for a moment, that we talked about earlier was developing in California a county solar model ordinance to look at an ordinance that could be used essentially that you would, I suppose, create some peer pressure across the state to try to get adopted. Maybe you have some comments. Governor Brown, has your office been working to try and promote that kind of cookie-cutter approach to how you can actually move much more expeditiously in getting a kind of consistent applicability, if you will, of ordinances and regulations regarding solar installation?
Well, there's permitting for a house. There's permitting for a larger 5 or 10 megawatts of photovoltaic in some land, business rooftops. There's two regulatory hurdles. There's just getting a permit. Anytime you do something on your house over a certain minor dollar amount, you're supposed to get a permit. So that could take a cookie-cutter ordinance, and we can also bring pressure to bear. There are 58 counties, and there's over 400 cities that can all issue these permits. And then we have the other issue where environmental review or planning department, planning commission discussions and decisions then invite community participation and therefore inertia, opposition, and slowing down. And it is true that when you have 38 million people and little pieces, little subsets of those 38 million, there's always going to be somebody who says no, because change is different, and some people don't like the difference. So our system of participation is such that any old fool can object to anything. So what's the way forward? Restricting participation is very difficult. It has the feel of undemocratic. And yet, if you allow every person, however benighted, to play a role here, you're not going to get anything done. And that's why I mentioned my experience in Oakland. You have to push in a certain way that almost feels arbitrary. But the way our system has evolved, the tens of thousands of laws, the hundreds of thousands of regulations, that it's very hard for anyone to make a decision quickly. And I know people rail against the regulations, and let's just change it. The fact is that the regulations are so embedded into our culture, our legal system, that to overcome it, it is difficult. And it's a product of the state of where we are in our current history and development. So that is an issue, and I think, but things can be done. And that's really what I'm looking forward to as one of my prime responsibilities, overcoming the inertia at the local level. And what you're overcoming here is logic, because every law has a certain logic that continues to expand its reach. And the only way to stop that is to stop it, to intervene in some way. And that's really what the stakes are. If we just sit around and watch it and let the process unfold, we're not going to get to the goal in the timely way that I think we should. So that's the commitment that I'm going to make, and I know everyone in here has a role to play. But I think locally, particularly, this is not going to be the Energy Commission. This is going to be the County Board of Supervisors. This is going to be the City Council. This is going to be the Planning Department. This is going to be one person inside a planning department in some small city somewhere. Now, that's a lot of distributed power, political power. And so we need a centralized base of arbitrary intervention to overcome the distributed political power that is blocking forward progress.
Overcoming distributed power, DP, with DG, right? Is that the...
What's the DG?
The distributed generation.
No, this will be centralized generation.
Got it. I think everyone should be tweeting that right now. Lyndon, you want to jump with us a little bit in your experience? And when I was trying to push you when we were on the phone talking, maybe you should publish a list of the number of days. You know, the United States right now is, I think, 27th in the world compared to other countries in terms of the ease of getting permits and doing business in a very famous World Bank report, and not so good, actually. But it would be interesting within California to sort of look at the communities where they get it and then those communities that don't. I don't know if your company wants to do that. Could be, you know, get you in the bullseye, but it should be interesting.
It will definitely work with the industry association to do that. But something, I know there's a lot of emphasis on permitting, but ranking barriers, I'd say the number one barrier is education. Mm-hmm. So educating the market that solar is real and is viable today, we still find as the hottest challenge that we as a company face. The permitting is a pain, but we've got a process right now to deal with it, and it's costly, and we'll improve it over time. But the biggest barrier is just the education. People still go, oh, does it really work? After you explain it, does it heat up my water? They don't understand what solar electricity is. You describe that you can finance it, not pay it, get it free, and just pay for the power. After you spend 10 minutes describing that they can get it for free and they're only paying for the power, at the end of the conversation they say, so how much does it cost again to install? So it's the business models, what the CSI program has done has evolved business models. The incentive program was at $2.50 a rebate per watt, and now it's down at 35 cents. Adoption has never been higher at the lower incentive level. So we really get into that cross curve. But the barrier is educating the market that solar is real and it's a viable solution today and a good investment for both consumers as well as for businesses that want to invest in this.
Before I get into the I'd like to open up the floor and then offer some time for questions. But I'd like to pose a question just to the panel and Governor Brown on an issue that we do worry about in Washington that I do think is serious, and that is the jobs question in the country. And this seems that we hear a lot about green energy jobs. And if you do look over a period of time over the last decade, green energy jobs have grown about 2.5 times faster than other jobs, and that's there. But when I go to China, or I go to Germany, I go to Scandinavia, and we were to be in a similar room, it's very hard for me to imagine a greater concentration of renewable expertise and real market power than exists in this room right now. But if we were to go to the equivalent in Germany or China, we may be dwarfed because they have done so much in terms of laying out, subsidizing. And when I look at research dollars, the New America Foundation, which I helped found in Washington, did a study of research dollars. And for every dollar that essentially goes into the research and development side of renewables, about 3/4 of it sieves out immediately to China, Germany, and Scandinavia. So it does look like there's an absence of, we used to call it industrial policy, or connecting demand and targets to building capacity. Now, I know, Lyndon, you're out there on the retail side of this, and you're hiring real people to install, but I would love to get any thoughts on how any real advances in this would change the job equation in this state and perhaps nationally. Any comments on jobs?
Go ahead, Governor. So the one thing I do like about the DG job creation is that whenever you get an industry, you often get a core. So technology, for example, the core is in Northern California. Foam is in Southern California. With DG, essentially the core is spread out. The local jobs in every community. So it is nice from that perspective. And one, I know there's a lot of emphasis on jobs being exported to China for the panel manufacturing. But most of the jobs are actually created in delivery. The amount in delivery is about 2 or 3x more than the manufacturing. So, and you cannot outsource delivery. Delivery has to be local.
David?
I agree. I think that the clean tech industry is creating jobs. It's just that the American public aren't seeing it, and the political opposition is saying that by raising the price of electricity, you're going to destroy more jobs than you're creating directly, which is an unproven concept. But I think that is I just agree with Lyndon that's a big advantage of distributed solar, of utility-sized solar, because when you build a 300 megawatt solar or photovoltaic out in the desert, no one sees the jobs being created, even though there are being created. But when you're doing distributed solar, it's in every neighborhood, and it is local people that are installing it. So it is it's a much more diversified job creation, much more visible. So I think it's a very positive aspect of distributed solar.
Rick?
So we think the distributed solar model is great for this reason. It's to Lyndon's point, the incentives have stepped down, but the cost of the panels have had dramatic reductions over the last few years. Even just over the last 2 years, the levelized cost of energy from solar panels has dropped by like 34%. They're on an incredible cost reduction curve, which is a great opportunity to help deploy these panels into business models that we think, frankly, make a lot of sense. Who wouldn't, unless they just don't understand the business model, who wouldn't sign up to have solar power on your roof at lower costs? That sounds like it makes sense to me. So we think that kind of a business model really can help distributed solar roll out quite a bit more broadly. The thing about clean energy jobs is that if we don't take a leadership position, those jobs just won't happen, right? And I think having California take a leadership role here is very important, and especially on the distributed side, because that is where the bulk of the jobs are coming from. So we're very supportive of those kinds of business models, and we'll continue to look at opportunities to invest in the space.
Governor Brown, the jobs part of the equation?
Well, you were saying before about how if we were in Germany or China, there'd be a lot more people talking about the issue. And the reason for that...
Or maybe taking instructions in case of the Chinese government, but...
Or whatever, more people, more eyes on the prize.
Right.
And that's because those two countries have systems that allow executive leadership more latitude. For whatever historical reasons, particularly in California, there has evolved a system that constrains leadership at all levels in the public sector. There are so many people that can block things. And when you're in the position of deficit rather than surplus, people are fighting over the less. They're fighting over whatever they can get or grab or persuades people to vote them. And that is the existing power base, the existing not electric power or solar power, but the interest groups that have been historically at the government revenue stream, and that's where all the action is. If you read in Washington, they're not talking about distributed solar power because they're talking about the debt limit. They're talking about revenue or not revenue. They're talking about cutting entitlements, and that can occupy a lot of intellectual and political energy. And then so the task of maintaining a country and the momentum that we've had historically is somebody has to think long term, and that somebody has to have some authority, and you have to exercise it. And yet, in some ways, that's becoming almost un-American to vest any political personality with enough authority to get stuff done that doesn't please the immediate news cycle. And that is really the challenge we're facing. Can anybody, anywhere in the public sector, make long-range decisions and make them stick? Now, one thing we have in California, we have a public utilities commission, and it only takes 3 votes to get a decision. Now, before you get the 3 votes, you have to have endless interveners and filings to talk about it. But at the end of the day, it's still only 3 out of 5. It's a lot less than 41 in the Assembly or 21 in the Senate. Now, of course, if the PUC gets rates going up too high, then I'll have to throw out the people I appointed. So there are constraints, but I do think
there's one here somewhere.
I think the real issue here, it's hard to, for, it's two things. One, nobody's in charge. Anybody who gets in charge is pretty quickly pulled back. And two, longer range thinking when it takes immediate costs is not privileged and not favored. I give you one example, the PACE program. The PACE program, to me, is a no-brainer, where lenders can enable business homeowners to put a lien on their house to for collateral for a loan for renewable energy. Now, why is the federal government in a progressive administration stop that? Well, that's part, it's long-term. We're a little afraid about yesterday's meltdown in the financial markets. So no PACE program, even though 25 states have adopted it, the federal government has killed it. Doesn't make much sense, but it's an example of the very opposite of long-range thinking to deal with issues. And if all we do is fight over the problems and the deficits and the less today, and we don't make the long-term investment, then America will be in deep trouble. So I think it's that executive leadership, long-range investment.
Again, just one more question. We'll go to this gentleman here if we can run a microphone over to this gentleman. But Governor Brown, just real quickly, you just came up with a concrete example of how Washington got in the way of long-term planning and the welfare of its citizens, the financial and economic horizon for them. Are there other things in this energy environment that D.C. does that put up more hurdles than help?
I'm sure they do. Somebody here can probably think of them. It's not, I mean, hurdles. It's not just enough not to put up hurdles. That's a very low bar.
Right.
What about doing things? What about getting stuff done?
Now, that's tough.
No, but one thing we have to recognize that under the stimulus program that President Obama and the Congress put together, that's the biggest energy investment program America ever has. So that was a big, big winner. But that's when you had a big bucket of money in response to this fiscal crisis. So what are the ingredients of that? The ingredients of that is massive fear that the financial system will collapse, and therefore, give me $750 billion and I'll fix it. How many? You can't get that very often.
Maybe August 3rd.
How do we get $750 billion without a financial panic? That's the real problem. How do we get people to invest and spend? And that's really the dilemma of where we are right now.
Thank you. Yes, sir, and if you'll identify yourself, please.
Certainly. Craig Lewis with the Clean Coalition. I want to start by just thanking the governor for your amazing leadership on so many issues, including distributed generation. My question is really around the fact that the vast majority of solar being deployed in the world is being driven by feed-in tariffs on the wholesale side of the meter. So it's interconnected directly to the utility side of the meter, not to the retail side, not to the customer side. Given that connecting to the wholesale side puts us in play with FERC and your prior administration as governor and as attorney general, you've had a lot of interaction with FERC. So taking us back to your earlier comments about sometimes you gotta try to play nice and other times you gotta try to crush folks. That's a lot easier crushing folks when it's inside your scope of control inside the state of California. How are you feeling right now with FERC? We've made a lot of progress in avoided cost issues around feed-in tariffs. We've still got some issues to go, maybe to get a premium.
We've got a lot of questions, so we're going to
okay.
I need to get right
yeah,
to
sorry.
It.
Well, FERC, I'd rather have someone who's more expert than I to talk about the latest state of affairs with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mark or Michael, are we happy with FERC right now, or are we unhappy?
Thumbs up or thumbs down?
What?
We're making progress. I'm saying this is reliable.
You see, you got, this is the nature of a decentralized system. You have the Federal Energy Regulatory, and then you have local planning departments, and you got to get them all on board. And then you need banks, and then you need a lot of people, and that's. But I think we're getting there. We're going to make some progress, and I think there's a positive view in Washington for
Great.
Alternative energy.
Right here.
Thank you. My name is Jody London. I'm here today wearing three hats. One, I represent a statewide organization called the Local Government Sustainable Energy Coalition. We get involved in implementation issues at the regulatory agencies on behalf of local governments. I'm vice president of the Board of Education in Oakland, and I am also a consultant to Sustainable Conservation, an organization that's worked very hard on biogas issues. And I appreciated the comments from Mr. Lewis about FERC and interconnection. And what I want to emphasize for you, the challenges around interconnection, and I also want to encourage you to think more broadly about diversity in the renewable resource portfolio. A lot of the discussion this morning has been focused very much on solar, and I think that's appropriate. There's a role for it, but I also think there's a very big role for other renewable technologies, particularly the suite of biomass and biogas technologies that do a lot around methane destruction, which is much more potent than carbon, and also can operate in a baseload mode. So those are my thoughts.
Thank you. Any response from our other panel members on beyond solar? Rick?
So we've made investments in several technologies, solar both at a large scale and a smaller scale, solar thermal. We're actually co-investors with NRG on a Bright Sources Ivanpah plant. We've invested in large-scale PV in Germany. We actually have invested in distributed solar here in the United States and in California mostly. We would welcome the opportunity to look at waste to energy using methane as a power source. We've actually have looked at some deals like that, and we think that those can be attractive from two points of view. Certainly the return on the investment, but also the significant environmental impact they have by reducing and destroying methane, which, as you point, is like 21 times the impact of carbon dioxide. So we think those are important opportunities to look at as well. And, one of the things that we look at is how scalable is a project or a technology. And so we're looking at, it's one of the questions we have with waste to energy is how much could you replicate that around the country, around California and around the country. But we think that's an important part of the mix.
Thank you. David?
Well, I think the same thing. We're trying to do all sorts of renewable, sustainable technologies, but I really think solar, and particularly distributed solar, is something that's so scalable. I know I once listened to, an MIT professor say, look, the global energy industry is a $6 trillion industry, and, if you're not going to provide me with 10% of the solution, I don't want to talk to you because, as a matter of policy, there are a lot of technologies out there that are more in the fringe and people should do it, but they're not really going to solve the problem. And I would say, like Rick, we have some very, very interesting technologies in the waste energy. The environmental footprint of the way this country deals with its waste is, almost a crime. And the energy potential of that same waste is one of our great untapped resources. But I would say, and we haven't tried this in California, so this is now a California company. The vested interests on the public policy side and the government side, most politicians just don't want to deal with waste. If their current waste disposal system is working, they don't care how environmentally bad it is because, you get talked about moving other people's waste into your jurisdiction. Politicians just don't seem to want to talk about the innovative new things that you could do in waste disposal. So we feel like when we try and do that, we're banging. I mean, if I talk to you about how much New York City pays to get rid of its waste and where it takes it and how badly it degrades the environment. But even a progressive mayor like Mayor Bloomberg's like, there's a lot of vested interest in waste that you would have to fight, which I don't think exists in Seoul.
Very back.
Thank you. Governor Bernadette Del Caro with Environment California. We're a nonprofit, citizen-funded environmental advocacy organization. Thank you so much for your leadership and your vision. Clean air, green jobs, innovation is exactly what California needs right now. My question is, Despite the downturn in the housing market right now, incorporating solar and energy efficiency and marrying it together in the built environment as we build California, both our residential and our commercial buildings, is one of the cheapest, fastest way and smartest way to build out solar. I'm curious, Governor, where this idea of incorporating solar into new homes and into new construction fits into your vision for California in the future.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think it's a good idea. In fact, we tried that when we were talking about solar hot water heating 30 years ago. But, of course, builders are worrying about costs, and there's not too much of it going on right now. But I definitely think it should be part of our program. I'm glad you brought it up because we haven't been talking about that, have we, Michael? A little. We can talk about it more. And it certainly makes a lot of sense to do this right when the house is being built and the structure is being built. So, yeah, I think that is an important component, and we will pursue it.
Right here in the very back. Do we have a microphone back there? Oh, I'm sorry. If you have somebody else in mind, go ahead, and then you can go to her next. Yeah, great.
Good morning.
I'm just kidding, because we have a lot of questions out there. I'm going to ask people to go right to the question, okay, right after you.
Perfect. I'll speak fast. Good morning. My question is actually about permitting. I work for a company called Sunrun. We finance residential solar, which is very similar to SolarCity. And we actually released a report this morning that indicates that there will be an additional $5 billion to California over the next 8 years if we streamline permitting. That includes 4,000 incremental jobs. So
where's this report, the Sunrun report? And I'm going to repeat it since you're kind of quiet, that you said there'll be a $5 billion gain over how much time?
Over 8 years.
8 years if permitting reforms?
Yes. And okay. So the question I have is somewhat related to what Lyndon was talking about. I think streamlining permitting unlocks the education and marketing impacts that Lyndon was concerned about. So my question is, how is California going to lead the effort to streamline permitting?
How is California going to lead the effort to streamline permitting? I've hit on that a couple of times, but Governor Brown?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're working on it.
I thought it was all in the crush metaphor.
No, it is, Michael. You're the expert on this. We have a full-time...
This is the guy. Everyone should have his business card the time they leave this meeting. Great. Great.
Right.
Thank you.
So it's being handled.
Thank you very much. I would like to know, where do they get the Sunrun report? Is it on your website? Well, we've got a lot of people watching online right now in Washington, I hope, and around the world. But on your website? Okay, great. Yes, sir. Next person. Yeah. And don't forget to go to this lady in the back because we kind of ripped her off. Yes. Yes, sir.
Robert Freeling. I was wondering to what extent you can put the different pieces of the puzzle, the different resources around the state, so that one thing that is sort of separated over here can get plugged in as a solution somewhere else. Some of the things that have already been discussed, you talked about how it was too expensive for builders to have solar on new homes, and yet we have a proposal here, a whole business model, where somebody can put solar for free on someone's roof and then just charge them for the energy. So... And then we have...
I'm going to ask you to get right down in the
nugget
of question.
I'm just wondering if there's a way to plug these different pieces together.
We got this great idea. We ought to go to UCLA and see if they'll host a conference. But
we are plugging it now.
Yeah.
And it's the nature of distributed generation that a lot of hands are required. So we're talking about tens of thousands of businesses and hundreds of thousands of roofs and thousands of decision makers. So it's distributed. So this is the conference. This is what we're doing. So I'd say the pieces are being integrated. That's exactly what's happening. It's not like saying we're going to build a 1,000-megawatt nuclear power plant or a 500-megawatt gas combined cycle gas plant. That's very specific. You get a group of constituents, and you push ahead. This is tens of thousands of little decisions, but that's the nature of this business. It's also one of the reasons why it's more secure and less brutal. It's not, you don't turn it off with one event. That's the nature. It's both the distribution is its strength, and it's also its challenge because there's so many different minds that have to come together.
I see everybody's pointing. We're going to take two last questions. This lady I kept, put your hand, stand up. The one that just, you stand up, get over to her. We're going to go to this question first and then to you. We're going to take them both at the same time. But yes.
Thank you, Governor, for organizing this conference. Nancy Skinner, Assembly Member. Quick comment, just want to make sure that we do return to the issue of solar water heating. It is where, on our coastal areas, in the residential sector, it is where the majority of carbon is in the residential sector. But my question to the panelists is, if each of you CEOs had one thing that you thought was most important for the state to do in relationship to achieving the governor's goals, could you indicate to us?
You're very cool, because that was going to be my closeout question to them. I feel like we owe you, so if you just put your question on the table as well.
Thank you, Johanna Parton, City of San Francisco. Appreciate all the discussion around solar. Have a question about other renewable sources. The state of California has a tremendous amount of renewable energy potential offshore, and the state of Oregon is doing a tremendous amount to promote offshore wave, ocean, and wind power. I'm wondering, Governor Brown, what your thoughts are for the state promoting offshore renewables in California.
So we have offshore renewables and then the Assemblywoman's real challenge. What's the one thing that you would do if you could do anything? I'm going to start with Lyndon.
On the offshore? I'll take the one thing. Actually, I have two things. One would be market education that solves affordable, and second, remove the 5% net metering cap. Two action items.
You running for office? David?
Well, I would expand the renewable auction mechanism.
Speak a little louder.
I would expand the renewable auction mechanism. I think that's a great program. And anything that California does in the feed-in tariff as well, I think, would be fantastic. And I would say, as a CEO of a company that's trying to do offshore wind off the East Coast of the United States, it just can't compare in price, I don't think. And when it comes to offshore, I follow the Kevin Costner principle from the movie Waterworld. Anything you do in the ocean is three times more expensive than what you do on land. So I think the East Coast has to do offshore wind because it's their best renewable resource. But I think the best renewable resource in California is the sun. So that's what California should focus on.
Thank you, David. Rick?
Well, I think if we had to pick one thing, it might be just to reduce the friction in deploying more renewable energy. And there's friction at the distributed scale. There's friction at the larger scale. With respect to offshore, we have invested in an offshore transmission backbone, which we hope to actually help lower the costs of offshore wind. With respect to the West Coast, we're not blessed with a long, shallow continental shelf. So I would say those technologies still need to prove themselves economically in the business models, and we encourage them to do so. It's a little difficult for us to invest in large-scale projects of those technologies at this point, though, because of the cost and reliability issues.
Governor Brown?
What I can do is to make sure that the various leaders in the different agencies at the state level and the various leaders at the city and county level work as quickly and as efficiently and as thoughtfully as they can. One of the governors are subject to the same rule of being hampered and constrained by lots of rules and countervailing pressures. One of the things governors can do is call a meeting and have people show up. And that's not to be minimized. I can also get people on the phone. Now, beyond that, it's not clear what governors can do. Can veto bills, but that's a very limited power. So calling people together and calling them on the phone. And I intend to call the right people together as often as I believe they need to be called together, and then also make sure they're meeting even when I'm not talking to them, and then call the right people on the phone who need to be called. And sometimes that's a group in a local county that is blocking. And I think the most powerful idea is when you see these regulatory regimes to figure out how you can, you know, respond to their decent element, but to eliminate all the excretions. What does it mean when things exfoliate? What's the word? Excretions, I think. Whatever. I can't say it right.
Works for me.
But everything just, it's like barnacles on a ship. All these rules take on little sub-rules, and they multiply they metastasize. And that has to be countered. And that countering can be a brutal process because each person gets a hold of an idea and starts pushing it. And if you let everybody push their ideas, nothing happens. So we do need some authoritative, effective leadership. And to the extent that a governor of California can provide it, it will be provided.
You know, I'd like to just say in closing, you know, we're at UCLA, and the Luskin Center on Innovation is here, and I've done some, you know, work and writing in the past on regulation and innovation and how change sort of happens. And one of the areas that I feel very strongly about where we are now, but if you look at a lot of areas, you see inertia and continuity driving thinking, and then there are these moments of discontinuity where everything gets rethought, everything gets rebuilt, everything gets reinvested. It's one of the inflection points in history or how business works, and I very much feel that today, and this is sort of a punctuation point, that we're in an inflection point in thinking about innovation in a very, very important way. It's such an honor to be with all of our panelists, but particularly Governor Brown. I want to thank everyone for joining us, B of A and the Luskin Center, the Governor's Office for joining us today. We're going to take a break now. And on behalf of the Atlantic, thank you very much for advice. We're going to write more about this subject, so let us know. Thank you. Yeah, thank you.